Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Kazumi Go, a dynamic senior manager for operations and sales at Food Panda Philippines. With over 8 years in operations and accounts management, including roles at SM Supermalls and JG Summit Holdings, Inc., Kazumi is a force in the industry. Her educational background includes a diploma in applied project management from Ateneo Graduate School of Business and a BS in business administration from Ateneo de Manila University. At Food Panda, Kazumi has excelled in managing groceries and dark stores, demonstrating skills in customer experience, people management, and business development. Her experience in multicultural environments and her openness to travel and relocation make her a versatile and adaptable leader. I've asked Kazumi to join us here today to share her story and insights in driving operational excellence plus sales growth in the competitive world of food delivery services. So Kazumi, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Hi, Daryl. Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing quite well. Thank you.
Good.
How about you?
Yeah, good. We were just talking about the giant hole in the sun, and I'm like entertained and terrified at the same time. It's ultraviolet light. It happens often, but it's just a massive hole in the sun right now. And it looks like the eye of Sauron from Lord of the Rings, like our sun right now, the time of this recording, when you compare the photos. This is creepy, but aside from that, everything is good. And no matter what's going on in the world, one of our past guests, I'm on a rant, but one of our past guests is an owner of a massive luxury hotel chain, international. And he had an interesting story about Indonesia, that they were having a coup and there were tanks literally rolling down the street. Buildings were being set on fire. People were rioting outside, and he still had to operate the business. People still showed up for their shifts. The chefs still had to cook food in the restaurant. The waiters and waitresses had to serve. They had to put ropes in all the bedrooms in case the building got set on fire, so people could like rope out, like they were concerned about it. But you have to chop wood and carry water no matter what's going on, as they say. So despite seeing this and being like, the show must go on. People need to eat. So food needs to be delivered. And before we hop into the operations and sales, I always like to ask, how did you even get started in business and sales? What got you down this career path? Are your parents entrepreneurs?
I do come from a Filipino-Chinese background. So yes, my family does have a family business. However, my father was lucky enough to be given the choice to take on a corporate career. So I won't necessarily say it was my parents who influenced me to go down this path. But what I can say led to me starting this kind of career would be my desire to, or my enjoyment of doing things very hands-on. Like, I'm not someone who likes sitting down at the desk, just, you know, typing away, or just constantly staring at a screen, analyzing numbers or making reports. I actually do getting down and dirty, getting my hands into the thick of things. And when I first started with SM Supermalls, that was one of the options they gave me. So I did join one of their programs to fast track my onboarding. So it's either you do a 6-month training or you just do a regular 6-month probationary period. So I did the training portion, and they did give me different paths. Like, I could do a marketing path. I could do like an account management path where you handle tenants that you bring into the malls, or you handle operations, which is basically making sure the whole mall runs smoothly and does not burn down. So I took the operations path, and from there, that's just trajectoried myself all the way into operations.
So I imagine that's got to be a bit of a challenge operating a mall. There's a lot of people, a lot of moving parts, a lot of like bylaws, a lot of security issues, community issues. What were some of the biggest challenges, I guess, you faced in your career? We can talk about SM, but in your career as a whole.
Yeah, so in my career as a whole, most people would say that with operations, the most challenging thing would be having different problems every day. But the thing is, when you enter into operations, you already know you're going to have different problems every day. And that to me personally is one of the more exciting things, like the positive things, because things are never boring. What I do find the most challenging would be having to handle different people profiles, because you're not just talking about speaking to mid-manager levels or rank and file levels, which are one of the lower levels in the corporate system, but you're also going to be speaking to executives, you're going to be speaking to customers, to suppliers, to collaborators. Then you're going to be speaking to different departments as well, because you are in operations. You basically make sure everything runs smoothly and runs well together. So you are talking to marketing, finance, even to the partnerships team, the promos team, everyone. Like, you're one of the jokes that we do make here in the Philippines is that we are like the housekeepers of the mall. So we're the nannies, we're the maids, because we have to know what is going on all the time, what's going on with everyone, and how things are going to end up. That's the one major thing that I think is a big challenge. It's very exciting, but also it does take up a lot of your time, because you are trying to adjust all the time, just trying to make sure everyone works well together. There also is new language. So personally, I grew up speaking English, but of course, when you start working in operations in any country, you're going to have to really learn the local or the native language, because people are not going to be the people who are working with you, or especially the ones doing the manual work, are not going to necessarily know how to speak your language, or not necessarily know how to speak the way you speak. So I really had to improve my grasp of the local language, especially with
I'm
technical
having to do
terms.
that now. That's on my to-do list. I'm getting there where I've started to be like, I will make so much more money and have such an easier time if I can just learn Tagalog really well. That's anyway. So you're really hitting my buttons here, talking about this, because this has been coming up a lot lately.
Yeah, one of the things though in the Philippines that's quite unique is that not being able to speak the local language does have its benefits, especially for someone like you who is, I don't know if this is going to be offensive, but clearly a foreigner.
No,
I
I
mean,
get
the
it.
way
I
you're
live,
looking.
yeah. No, you're good. Sorry to interrupt. I lived in Japan for 3 years, and I know people that play the foreigner card all the time. I knew a guy, he would get the, because everything is a train in Japan, right? I lived in Tokyo 3 years, and he would travel from city to city, but he would pay for the kids' ticket. And when you go through the turnstiles, the only difference between the adult and the kids is there's a little light that blinks up. And if he ever got stopped, he'd be like, oh, sorry. This is not something I would do. I consider myself a highly ethical person. But my point is that foreigner card, it works a lot. I've ordered things at restaurants. This actually, I have done this because if you're a foreigner in Japan, typically a lot of them, they have plastic models of the meals outside. When I went, I didn't speak any Japanese. So I realized very quickly to only eat at the restaurants with plastic displays. So I knew what I was getting. Because otherwise you're looking at a bunch of gibberish. You have no idea what it is. You're pointing at things. And I got some of the grossest stuff ever. And I'd be like, oh, sorry, what kind of nakata? I didn't know. Allergy. Oh, I have an allergy. And I play the foreign, like I couldn't read, oh, this said disgusting, slimy thing that I want to puke on. And it's $20 for a plate. I didn't know that. The foreigner card. Yes. Okay.
Yay. Yeah, no, that's super. It's not even just the foreigner card, actually. It's one of the things I would often mention to some people who are struggling, would just be that if you know what your weaknesses are, find a way to twist it and make it become an advantage. So, like, people like us who can't, maybe who don't speak the local language, if we figure out that acting all cutesy or just pretending, sorry, I don't really know, and trying to play to their humane side or to their soft spot gets you, allows you to do more things that way than do it. Honestly, as long as you're not violating any laws, you're not hurting anyone, and it gets things done faster, then I personally would say go ahead. But of course, if you are reporting to someone, just let them know that's what's happening, just to cover all of your tracks.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So, what were, let's talk about some of the challenges. You said learning language was a challenge. What else were some of the biggest challenges that you faced in developing in your career of operations and sales?
There was a lot of terms I didn't know, technical terms. The simplest ones would just be with plumbing and engineering because I did have to handle mall operations. There were a lot of those that I didn't understand. I was that very annoying girl who was just like, yeah, there's like a red wire sticking out of the ceiling and stuff like that. It was quite embarrassing. But the thing is, what I realized when working with professionals or people who are experts in their fields, you can start out like that. Like, you can always just come out being very ignorant and quite stupid. But the thing is, as long as you are sincerely and genuinely showing that you're trying to learn, they appreciate it. Because they know that you're not from their field. They know that you're not familiar with what they're doing. Even with when I recently joined sales, there are quite a number of terms, such as like back margins, front margins, GMV, and all of that. I didn't know what it was. Like, I knew the concept, but I didn't know what their official technical titles were. I would just openly say what I knew. And then when someone mentioned it, I just, without shame, go, sorry, I'm not familiar. What does that mean? And that way, it allows people to just understand as well that, hey, look, she's not very familiar, but we're going to give her some time because she genuinely and sincerely wants to learn anyway. And they appreciate that. They would rather have that than you come off as very arrogant, as a know-it-all, and just pretend that, and then end up making mistakes, costing everyone more effort and time to fix for you.
So it sounds like by respecting, I'm a writer downer, so I was writing that. It sounds like it's okay if you don't have all the answers when you're working with experts because it validates them being there. And what you
Yes.
really need to do is just be genuine and sincere. And it sounds like you need to keep the end goal in mind.
Yes, correct. Yep. There's no room for your pride in things like this. If you don't know something, just admit it, and it'll eventually, you'll all figure out a way to work together to get the problem solved. Yeah.
So, can you speak to maybe what some of the specific skills and behaviors that you think are important, perhaps for yourself and your staff, to improve or develop?
I really believe in the power of observation. So I think like with anything that you plan to do, even if you're not actually going to get involved in it. So let's say you hear about a project, and you just happen to be in the meeting that they're discussing that, it still helps to keep your senses open, watch what everyone else is doing, listen as well. Listen very carefully. And it's not just listen to the business stuff, or you listen as well to side comments that they make, because that it's the side comments that are actually very insightful, because they could be talking about a project and then you hear someone right next to you go, I honestly think this is not going to work. Because with that, then you go, okay, there are some doubts about this project and how is it going to affect me? How can I improve on it? How can I help out? And this is all, even if you're not going to be involved, you could say, just in case they throw me in, what kind of insights can I give? Meaning, okay, the people are not confident about this, but if there's someone else who goes, yeah, I've already started on it, but they haven't listened to me, then you know, okay, if I become involved in this project, then I know I got to tap this person who has some valuable work done that isn't being recognized for it. Then you start building a new relationship as well that way. Then also, again, just use your mouth, ask questions, don't be afraid, but also make sure to be kind. Honestly, a lot of people forget about that. It's people management. People forget that behind the work, behind the numbers, there's still a person who is getting it done. And I really think that's one of the biggest things that people overlook, especially when it comes to trying to get something done. Yep, that's really, and I guess one more thing I often say to people who do ask me about these things is, there's only so much your schoolwork can teach you. At the end of the day, it's a very hands-on learning experience. Like, you can tell me everything you know about Google Sheets, Excel, putting together reports, graphs, but at the end of the day, if I give you a situation and you can't apply what you've learned, then it's for nothing.
I love that. Yeah, you can read books on tennis all day, every day, but until you get out on the field and start playing some games. And not only playing some games, until you start recording how you're doing and watching your tapes for how you're performing. Really tough to make progress in the world of results. And I think that you bring up a really important point there, because I'm speaking about my opinion here, but I feel that part of the what ails the world today, part of what is causing, or the root cause of a lot of the issues, is a big detachment from accountability in a lot of different areas. You could take, for example, the 2008 housing bubble, global housing crisis. A lot of that was caused by people that were really focused on making money, and there was no result. There was no, what am I trying to say? They were selling bad loans to unqualified people, and they were packaging it. There was no accountability. It was like participation awards versus performance awards. I'm a big advocate for meritocracy. And so what I'm saying is that the world of results, that academia, bless their souls, a lot of that stuff tends to have trouble being translated into the real world, because a lot of it does end up being theory and ideas and stuff. And there's a place for everything. We need education. If I had to go venture into the forest and try to survive for 30 days, I'd want to read some books on some theories and ideas, right? So there's a place for it. I'm not trying to say that, but I just, like what you say, that there has to be a respect given to the people in the trenches, and that what you learn in school may be helpful, but it may not be all that you need. At the end of the day, it is what it is. And it's, and in some ways it's evolving and changing so fast. People don't necessarily know, right, what's going on. I mean, there's people that are doing programs now that when they graduate, it'll be what they, everything they've learned will be, they will have gotten a piece of paper with a rubber stamp and signature on it, but what they've learned will already be obsolete in their field.
Sorry, go ahead.
Good, you're good.
Yeah, no, the thing is also people don't understand, even if you do case studies and everything in school, they're in very controlled environments. Look at me today. I had to bump our meeting like just a few minutes later, just because something last minute came up. And if I didn't know how to be flexible or like how to prioritize, I would be having like the worst day of my life, because I'd just be like, who am I supposed to prioritize? Who should I go with first? Because I have a meet, I have a personal meeting, but then I also have a meeting with executives. They have to understand that the real world is not controllable. It is not predictable. Like, things just randomly happen. And you have to deal with it.
I love that. I love that, because we've all fight for control of our lives, control of our health, all that. At some point, you just have to surrender to whatever you want to call it, the universe, the Tao, God, Allah, whatever you want to call it. At some point, you just have to go, I will trust my processes to see me through. But at the end of the day, I can't control outputs. I can't control results. And I can't control surprises. I just have to try to have really solid bedrock processes, and even like mental algorithms for how I approach things. Mental heuristics. I was trying to remember that word on another interview. Heuristic. A heuristic is like a rule of thumb. And that's, some of these have been, some rules of thumb, some heuristics were written in blood. When people forget what those are, can lead to catastrophe. And yeah, that's, you mentioned prioritization. How do you prioritize?
That one is a very, personally, I prioritize based on value added and urgency. That, and that is personal. That's my personal way of prioritization, because like everyone has a different method for figuring out how to prioritize things. But like me, it's value added, meaning like, what is going to be the most beneficial, and then urgency is how soon should I have it done. So let's say I need to buy a gift, and for some, I need to buy a gift for a manager who is leaving tomorrow. Value added, not very high, because it's just going to be a token. But urgency is, I need to have it done right away because they're leaving tomorrow. If I miss that deadline, then it's gone. Another example would be value added would be giving toolkits to all of my sales team. Value added would be very high because they would need that to be able to go out on the field and make their sales. But urgency, let's say I have them scheduled to go out next month. So therefore, I don't need to have it done right away. Like I can delay it for another week, another 2 weeks before I need to roll it out and hand it over to them. So
Sounds like the Eisenhower Matrix.
is it a see? This is me not knowing a lot of technical things.
No, this is the Eisenhower Matrix. So things are either important, not important, urgent, and not urgent. And he has a
Yes.
chart where importance is up and urgent is left, right. And if it's important and urgent, you do it. If it's important but not urgent, you do it. If it's not important and urgent, you really, do I really have to do it? Can I delegate it? And if it's not important and not urgent, you get rid of it. It's a way of organizing your to-do list. That's interesting. Yeah, no. So it sounds like organically you came to the same conclusion that the Eisenhower matrix works and is powerful.
Yeah, see, so this is like a great example of me like jumping into things, just figuring things out. And then now I know there's actually a whole matrix. And then now I
Oh,
can
it's
sound
fine.
professional and say it's the Eisenhower matrix.
It's you're fine. You're fine. You're fine. So we talked about trends for a little bit. What are some of the trends that you're keeping an eye on that maybe the business community that might be listening to this should pay attention to, whether it's the next 5, 10 years? What are the trends or evolutions that are on your radar?
One of the trends that I have experience with right now is a lot of startups. That's the really big thing right now. And if not startups, then a lot of new projects or new verticals, I would call them, where a business expands and tries to get into a trend. So they're an existing business, but they're just like, hey, there's a trend right now. Let's try to create a little project or a vertical from this business that would tap into that trend. And having been in the deep end of these kinds of things, I would really warn people, especially investors or people who are managing these kinds of things, to be very careful with the way they handle money. That's one thing, their financials, because I've seen either they are way too loose, like they just keep throwing money at things, saying like, hey, eventually they're going to earn it back when they didn't necessarily have to. Or they're just way too tight-fisted with their money to the point that they are understaffed. Their people are like stretched thin, and it just affects the way the business runs as well. Then also there is, it's a little bit of a tease where you're just so excited that you maybe have a new investment, or you just have this new blank sheet of paper to work with, that you just have way too many ideas, and you start losing the very core of yourself or your business by trying to chase after all of these ideas. I really feel that you have to prioritize and identify what is your value, what is your main service that you have a very strong hold of, and then chase that first before chasing all these other projects. Like all of them may be great, like, and it's great if all of them are great, but at the end of the day, you can't do too many things at once because you are going to end up sacrificing something, and it might be that what you sacrifice could have been your big break.
Stephen Covey says the main thing is to keep the main thing.
Correct.
What was his name? They did a movie about him. He was a famous, he used to say to not get outside your business. What was his name? I'm going to look this up quickly, but I love what you're saying. I think there has been a lot of P.T. Barnum. He, one of his rules of
Yes.
success was one, whatever you do it with all your might, and none. The next one was don't get above your business and to not scatter your powers. Those are a couple of things of his. And I think that's a really important thing here because the shiny object syndrome, everyone wants to change that, chase that. Startups are great. I think for a startup, you have to get a minimum viable product. Then you have to get some sales into proof of concept ASAP. A lot of people don't realize this, but I love to give the examples that good marketing and sales can sell a non-existent product when bad marketing and sales cannot give away free gold. And an example of this, Elon Musk. I wouldn't say a fanboy, but I have immense respect for what he's accomplished because multiple times he's put his fortune on the line betting on his ventures. He made $300 million US. I'm going to say this again. 300 $1 million US selling a car he had no factory to build and no team to make. I just want to put this, and the delivery date was in a year and a half, 2 years. $300 million in pre-sales. So if your idea is that great, you should be able to pre-sell it, or you probably won't be able to post-sell it. And I think that's an incredibly, he made a minimum viable product, right? Mm-hmm. First thing he did is he sold the concept to some rich friends, put some of his own money into the game, built it. And then when he had something, he's like, hey, it's going to look something like this.
Yeah.
And then he collected $300 million in $1,000 down payments. I think this is because you're talking about startups.
Mm-hmm.
Get paid. You can build forever. They will not come. Mm-hmm. Business Graveyard is littered with world-class products and services that nobody knew about. One of the things that I love that we talk with people is like market research, basic market research. Part of your basic market research, you should get a couple hundred surveys answered.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't get a couple hundred surveys answered, how are you going to get a couple hundred leads and prospects?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so most startups, they never get past that.
Yeah.
They just cackle like madmen in there. And I've never seen anybody finish a product. A lot of these tools, a lot of these products, they go through almost a year or more of focus groups and prototyping things
mm-hmm.
before it actually gets to the end user, like staging,
yeah,
beta testing. So I think that's just an important thing to put out there just because you mentioned it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a really important one.
Yeah. Actually, picking up from that, like another thing that a lot of these new businesses make a mistake on is they say, no, there is demand. But then the thing is, their demand is within their circle. They've never figured out, is there anyone else outside of my friends who would want something like this? If that's okay, yes. It should just be a hobby. Just make it for your friends and then you're good.
Yeah. And the analogy I use with my clients is maybe someone's really good at baking pies
mm-hmm.
and all their friends love their pies at all the barbecues. And they go, you know what? You should open up a bakery. And they go, you know what? I should open up a bakery. And then they dream about their logo and what mm-hmm. they put on the menu and what the layout would be and all this stuff. And then they go sign a 5-year lease. My daughter went to Enchanted Kingdom and we had to meet other parents. Her friend's parents that were there, and they're trying to set up a spa. And this is exactly the case for them where they like want to dream it. And they're like, they have no idea who they're going to serve yet. There's not a defined target market. Mm-hmm. It's the whole, like, this is what our logo is going to look like. And this is the layout. This is going to be the theme. And we're going to do this. And this is going to be like that. And it's all internal focus. And what happens a lot is, okay, this bakery, they launch, they get a location that they can afford that's close to their home, mm-hmm. all this stuff. And then they launch and all their friends and family come make the mandatory, we support you purchase.
Yeah.
And then they're really busy and there's no one keeping new business coming through the door.
Mm-hmm.
And then they deliver it and then they have no, their pipeline is empty.
Mm-hmm.
They have no customers.
Yep. Yeah.
And now also their friends bought it, but they're not like, it's okay. It's a nice to have, not a need to have for them. And now this person goes, hey, I've got this great product, but who am I going to sell it to now? Versus setting up with a small stand or something, or taking pre-orders, giving out free samples in mm-hmm. in an office neighborhood, all these mm-hmm. office buildings, having a small stall in the street, giving out free samples, collecting pre-orders, coming and delivering those pre-orders with a referral leaflet for some. There has to be a community that you're serving.
Yeah.
And I think that's so, I'm waxing poetic on this because it's mistakes that I've made, painful mistakes mm-hmm. I've made, very painful. And it's mistakes that I see people making too. And I think that's just a really good one to bring up.
Yeah.
Any other big mistakes that you notice people making?
Some of the mistakes as well would just be, like I have said this a while ago, so I might be just repeating myself, but it's also just people management. They do forget that they wouldn't have a company if they didn't have any people in it. Mm. And even if these people are really great workers, like they're very skilled, they get everything done. If they're not happy, if they don't even believe in your business, like they don't necessarily have to be happy, but you have to make sure that they believe in you or believe in the business. If you don't have that, you will have nothing because technically, basically, you are sabotaging yourself because you're surrounding yourself with people who do not support you. And that is like the worst way to go about and trying to build a business.
I agree. Yeah, I always say, even if you don't have an ethical bone in your body, even if deep down you're seriously like a sinister person, you're genuinely in it to long run, to have to survive. The only thing you can do is love on everybody. Love on your customers, love on your staff, love on your vendors. Because if you're trying to be it in the long run, we all have had experiences with big corporations that we hate dealing with, and we wish there wasn't a monopoly because we don't like how they treat us. We've all worked for clients or bosses that disrespect us and that, and we get out of those situations as soon as we can. So again, if you're trying to build long-term, you want to play long-term games with long-term people, you have to treat people right and with love. I think that's a fantastic tip as well.
Yeah. And if you have these people, if you have the loyalty of your people, they will go to the ends of the earth for you. It's not the greatest example, but if you look at the stereotypical profile of gangs, like criminal gangs, like they would, you would sometimes ask yourself, or even like cults, like you would ask yourself, like, how is it that these people are doing such horrible things and they know it, but then why do they still do it? It's just because their leader has captured their loyalty, their respect, their trust. That's how they are able to just go out as a huge group and do everything all together. Like it's still the same thing where they go, united we stand, divided we fall.
Yeah. And a lot of the people I've talked to, especially the big employers lately, they're saying how post-COVID hiring, the hiring environment has changed dramatically, where before you could put out a job post for a position and get your pick of people to choose from. But now it's slim pickings for whatever reason. The disabilities are up. Excess deaths are up. People have had come to Jesus moments in their lives. What am I doing with my life? So they're having career changes or starting the business that they never wanted to start or moving. And so it's really become more of a culture of training up from within. And also the things that are tough to train for, hiring for the soft skills, the things that are really hard. You can train skills, but their soft skills are really hard. Discipline, urgency, integrity. These are things that are really tough to train. And so a lot of people I've been talking to on the show that they're really looking to hire for those now. So now we already talked about a little bit then, but then what are some of the, in general, to really hit the nail on the head, what are some of the habits that you feel have helped you best on your path to success throughout these different phases?
Resourcefulness is one of my biggest things. And resourcefulness translates to the fact, which I mentioned, that I work with my strengths and then with my weaknesses, I try to find a way to turn them around and make them strengths as well in the short term. Of course, with the time that I do have extra, I try to build up those weaknesses. But otherwise, if at that very moment I need to do something where I am very weak at, I try to just turn it around, play to my strengths, and then also in that case be resourceful and find somebody who can help me or find something that can help me accomplish what I need to accomplish while I'm still trying to learn. So that's one thing. Number two would be being aware in the sense that I always make it a point to understand the dynamics of the company, how people work together, who you should talk to for something like for certain things, what is the best way to get things done? Because at the end of the day, even if there are policies, even if there's hierarchy in place, the whole corporate setup is one giant political game. Like there could be an executive, but that executive might actually have zero say in how things run. And the person who does have a say might be the humble engineer on the sixth floor who sits in a cubicle by himself because he knows how everything runs. So that's why it's very important to be aware and not only be aware of roles people play, but also of the politics that run and the relationships that exist. Then the last one would, last but not the least, just be to be very true, very true, very aware of what kind of person I am. Because with something like that, I know what boundaries I have, and I know how far I can push myself without breaking down or collapsing. And who I can also work with without sabotaging myself or harming the business. So three things that I usually keep in mind.
Those are great. Those are great. You've been very forthcoming. I've got a couple of notes here, pages of notes, sorry. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that I should have asked you about?
We have spoken about quite a bit of things. I guess, like, I did mention weakness a lot. So I would say if I were to share what weakness I have, and maybe I feel like some people have shared with me as well, but there might some this might help some people, is the weakness I have is pride. I am a very prideful person. A lot of people don't like being embarrassed, and I am one of those people who don't want to look like I don't know what I'm talking about, who look unprepared, who don't know certain things. So that is one of the things that held me back quite a bit. I used to be very arrogant, especially when I was fresh out of university. You think, I know everything. I own the world. I'm so much better than everyone else. And that was like my downfall. Like when I entered into the corporate world, I was just like, holy crap. I knew nothing. I would try to impose on people how to do certain things, like certain processes, and people would just shut me down. And then I would get very frustrated because I'd just be like, I'm smart. I am capable. Why aren't people listening to me? And that's when things started clicking in my mind, saying, no, nothing. Like, there's only like, your brain was trained to remember things, but you have not been trained to do things. Mm-hmm. So that is like the biggest thing. And until today, I still struggle with that. Like when I shifted over to sales, I was resisting very much just because I was entering into something I was not familiar with. Mm-hmm. And I had to be called out several times, being told like, hey, can you please get with the program? You are no longer in your former role. I know this is something new, but the longer you resist, the longer it's going to take for you to get used to things and to be able to achieve. Like right now, you're just stalling yourself.
What do you mean? What were some of the things that you're resisting? Can you give a specific, if you don't mind?
Oh, yeah, no worries. So in operations, I have a very flexible time schedule. And the thing is, that would mean I could technically start my day at like maybe 12 noon, but I would be working until 3 a.m. because we do have operations until late. But with sales, because we do have a series of meetings with suppliers and partners, if your office day starts at 9, your day officially starts at 9. And I was not used to that. I was very used to the fact that I had a very flexible schedule. So I was sometimes late for things, or sometimes I'd enter into meetings and I'd just not be prepared because I would come from a different meeting. So this would mean like I have to prepare way in advance. Whereas with operations, you think on the fly. You're very resourceful. You have to do things right on the spot. Whereas for meetings like this, you really have to prepare. You have to create reports. You have to read numbers. Then there was also heading out onto the field a lot. And I'm not the type of person. I will admit, I am not the most confident driver, especially in the Philippines. I don't know if you've seen that, but people here drive like crazy people.
Yep.
I'm not a confident driver. So when they would tell me I have to head out, I'd like dilly-dally. I'd just try to delay it as much as possible. But towards the end, in the end, I was just like, just put on your big girl pants. Please, you are so old. You have to mature already. Okay, stop trying to resist. Stop trying to whine and complain about it. And from the first 2 months, I was having the worst time. I was frustrated. I was upset all the time. But then when I decided, you know what, let's just deal with it, everything ran so smoothly. And I was telling myself, oh my God, why didn't you do this earlier? Your life would have been so much better this way. And I must credit my manager, the person I report to, for giving me this piece of advice, which is because he was telling me, I am not trying to make your life miserable, because he believes that I'm just trying. He told me, he said, I am trying to make you do everything, even if it isn't necessarily your job. Because if you can't do it, how could you expect your people to do it? So that's very good advice. Like, I was just like, it really helped me like wrap my head around certain responsibilities that I didn't have to do formally, and which isn't part of my job. And then like actually learn to accept it and then understand as well why I had to go through that stage of learning.
That's great. I just wrote down more things about that. I agree. I agree full. Even if you're not going to do it, if you're going to hire someone else to do it, you need to know how to do it well enough that you know what you're getting type thing. That's a really important thing. Because this has been a great call. If people want to reach out, if they want to get in touch, if they want to know more, what are some of the best ways for them to contact you?
I am quite active on LinkedIn, so they could always just look me up on LinkedIn. Yeah, I'm not very big on social media. I'm
Yeah, that's
trying
fine.
to stay
Yeah.
away from that. So LinkedIn is a great place to start. And then from there, if you just hit me up, I could always hand over my email address or WhatsApp if that works.
Okay. So everyone that's listening, if you have questions, if you want to follow up, go check out Kazumi Go, KAZUMIGO. You'll know you found the right one if she's in Manila, Philippines, and is working at Food Panda. Kazumi, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an honor and a pleasure. I know we had to push this because you've got so much going on. Thank you for coming and taking time to share with me and my audience and my people. Really appreciate your time and for you sharing today.
Thank you so much as well, Daryl. I am very honored to have been on your podcast.